What was as far as sort of cultural things were concerned, or entertainment type of things, what were the non-religious types of music, dance, that type of thing that Mennonites were into?
The dancing was slowly coming in. It was undeniable even before it broke down. And it was very much frowned upon. But what do you do if they people go out and dance? If your daughter, after having finished the Meiji Chula, or if the father lives in the city, however small, and sends her to the gymnasium, what will you do?
They have the freedom to to pursue their interests.
And the Mennonites were always good singers. There's no doubt of that. I don't know if probably the Russians as such are even greater singers. But the Mennonites are excellent singers, and oddly enough, for such a small group, you'll find surprisingly good voices in there. Even have this one opera singer who came from around here, from around Harrow, Victor Brown.
He's
a Mennonite.
That's right.
And he came from around here. And it was his father who was the musician, and who beat that into the youngsters, but he didn't know that the boy will have that kind of a voice and work.
Right.
He may not be tip-top when it comes to that, but he's good enough to sing in
professional levels.
Sadler Wells in London. For years he had a contract at the Munich Opera, or one of the German opera houses, for years. And he came and sang several times here with the Toronto outfit. And his sister is a violin player in the string choir of the Toronto Symphony.
I was going to ask you also about the... No, carry on.
Well, I was just going to say that for the later years, there were usually musical presentations in churches. There was gentleman by the name of Alexander Fast, no relationship, who knew music. He would come and be a choir into being, and would present a concert.
Of secular music?
Oh, yes, was usually sung in the church. Solemn things, by people, a bit of Bach, something of that. And ich bete an, mach der Liebe. So very few Mennonites even know that that's a beautiful Russian hymn written by Bartnyansky, which is not a German hymn born. I've heard the Don Cossacks, first concert singer. But they sang it, of course, in the Russian thing. We know the brothers in the Russian words, not the German words, the Russian words are. They were always well attended, very well attended, yes. And the choirs, this choir business actually goes back to, I have a picture here of, I don't know, it's away, I cannot just pick it up. Her mother, as a young unmarried girl, was in this choir of about Mennonite choirs mostly, or any voice around that district. Must have been between 40 and 50 voices, see.
Mm-hmm.
Would give their concert. That, of course, were large happenings, see.
How about things like more popular music or folkish type music, guitar accompanied?
That would come in. The popular side of it was coming in. Just between Neuhallenstein and Althallenstein, I don't know on which side, was the first movie house we had.
Really?
Yes. Which was known as Mariwa, the Russian word for mirage. Sunday. Sunday, of course, were open days. But before he would dare to show any picture what he had, the members of there would be a member from the Zentralschule, there would be one from the Kammertschule. They would have a private screening and decide whether it was suitable for the young man or not. That was number one. And then somebody was always in the audience to see whether it was a date, if it was not suitable. You could not go to there unaccompanied by your parents unless I think you had to be 18 or 19. Anything below that, your parents or a adult relative had to be with you, even if it was acceptable, you see. So you went. It was very popular, very popular. Of course, it was just coming in, and then the war, the revolution, and breakdown, you see. But the you could speak of it as it was coming in. It was there. People that went to Kharkov or to Moscow, particularly returning and full of praise of the theaters and what they have seen. Don't forget, these were the great days in Moscow, particularly of the Moscow Arts Theater. That to the present day is between 57 and 58 when I saw them. Just cannot believe it. I went and saw Anna Karenina as they do it. It's a very odd to the present day. It's a very modern way where there are no decorations at all. There's a revolving stage, and it continuously seems to be going because the scenes, there's about 30 or 40 scenes in that thing, so that there's no interruption. It just keeps on going. And as I say, there's no decoration. There'll be illuminated lines, like suggesting a racetrack, suggesting a room. And then when Karenin goes to speak to his lawyer about divorce, there is just the lawyer's desk, and the lawyer is there, and Karenin sits there in a desk. And now imagine the lawyer is chasing a fly, which you cannot see, which is imaginary. And you sit in the audience and you follow the fly as it gets up. And sits down without interrupting as he gives them the legal advice. And every once in a while he looks up there and raises up. And you know it's a fly. And there's no buzzing, there is nothing. This is
a very minimal sense.
This is acting in the likes of which I have never seen. I've seen acting in London, I've seen other acting in the regular stage in Moscow. Incidentally, the theater life in Moscow is very intense. And with the exception of one or two things post-revolution, anything new that they try to bring, it just doesn't last. People don't go.
Really?
It just collapsed. But the old ones are all there. Shakespeare runs there for months at a time in various and some very modernistic presentations, as they'll present you the whole story of Romeo and Juliet by just using squares like picture frames. And you have a look there, like quote me and so on and so on, and make it very acceptable. In excellent translations, incidentally, the best translations were done by the late Pasternak, the writer of
Horace Pasternak.
I was there when he received his Nobel, and the ceiling just rocked. It was awful.
How's that?
Well, so to speak, when they went against him and called him a pig and whatnot by being chosen for the Nobel Prize winning for Dr. Zhivago, which was printed by an Italian firm who was run by a communist, owned and run by an Italian communist. And the thaw came, so to speak, to an end. concerts were canceled. The great Richter, whom I've heard many times, he had a whole winter season of 20th century music, not too far in the modernity, what we would call here, but nevertheless, for Moscow, extremely modern. He canceled a whole season, he wouldn't play. And it was at a time when a Canadian singer, what's her name, from Toronto, was there. She's not yet on the she was singing, and there was a party given at the embassy, and quite a number of artists came, including some outstanding of the Russian. Conductors, rather speaking, one conductor, Ivanov, who later came with the symphony through the United States. And the official verdict of he cannot accept that he's a traitor to Russia and so on were already there. And that made me nearly cry. I said, what is going on? What is going on? What are you doing? And he just sat there, I don't know. I still see the man sitting in his chair. I don't know. He spoke Russian. I don't know. And his wife was next to him. She was just having them on his desk. The leaves crying down. I give him hell for such things as they would present the Bach St. Matthew Passion and the Requiem by Verdi, which is more operatic, whatever.
Right.
But it is nevertheless. Based on the Latin high mass wording, say that they would give that. And I asked them, what's wrong with you? Whatever happened to your wonderful Russian church music, Tchaikovsky, Rachmaninov, outstanding. I said, why don't you do that? He says, we can. I said, but you can give the passion of
definitely overtly religious words.
Well,
certainly.
And the public who goes there knows it.
Right.
All of them, the average Muscovite wouldn't go to that kind of concert, like the average Canadian wouldn't go here either.